Welcome back. It's 10:26. We are again recording. We'll do a quick roll call just to make sure everybody is present. Dr. King?
Here.
Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here. And now unmuted.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
And I do see Mr. Harris as well. And I'm Judy Chepius. So we are all present. Dr. King, the meeting is yours.
Thank you all. We are on our agenda item 5D. And we're moving into initial review. So if I may, I'm going to read our script to just summarize for those on the call who may not be familiar with what an initial review does, so that we're all aware.
Dr. King, just to clarify, Dr. King, it's 9D.
It's 90.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. What did I say? Too many Ds. 90D.
No, 5D. We're all good. We're on 9D.
9D. Okay. Initial reviews. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial reviews of complaints. There are three cases for the board to consider today. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary of how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we hear today, and I won't repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Kelly King. I'm the board's chairperson. We'll go around and ask the others to introduce themselves.
Karen Bustillo, professional member, vice president.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
John Knight, professional member.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Okay. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all of the materials submitted. If at any time it's necessary to refer to a patient, please only use initials. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary from the investigative report from our staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional if they are present and if they are represented by an attorney, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not take time to repeat information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, around 5 minutes or so. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant or the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy will be given an opportunity to modify their behavior and will be removed from the meeting room if not. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberation. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking no disciplinary actions such as issuing an advisory letter or an order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it's important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and that only one person speak at once. And then lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or consent agreement, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions or need additional investigative information, it may be more appropriate to move this case to an informal or formal hearing. Okay, so we are at 2202 Michael Angelo. Mr. Angelo, are you present?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and are you represented today?
Yes, I am, by Ms. Sarah Stark.
Okay, and is she present as well?
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Sarah Stark. I'm here.
Good morning. And then Is the complainant present? Are the complainants present?
We have three separate complainants. In this case, just a little bit of background. Three separate complaints were received about Mr. Angelo within about a month of each other. And because they were the nature of the complaints were similar, they were consolidated into one complaint. So we do have three complainants, Dr. McGinnis, Dr. Holly, and Philip Lloyd, physical therapist assistant. And I do believe they confirmed that they would be present today.
Okay, thank you. Mindy, would you please provide an overview of the complaint?
Yeah. The three complaints allege that Mr. Angelo improperly draped patients where others could view. A patient complained that his touching made her uncomfortable, a female patient. He made frequent inappropriate and or sexually based comments to patients and coworkers. He disparaged coworkers in front of patients and created a hostile work environment through threatening behavior and actions. In addition, a review of the patient medical record in this matter revealed that Mr. Angelo potentially engaged in substandard care as it related to his clinical practice. The deficiencies were outlined in the investigative report and are specifically in the areas of initial evaluations and reassessments. Mr. Angelo and Ms. Stark received a copy of the investigative report and provided a written response, which was included in your board materials as Exhibit 19. The potential violations cited in this matter include ARS 3220444, engaging the performance of substandard care by physical therapist due to deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury or to the patient is established. ARS 3220410-C, engaging in sexual misconduct, intentionally viewing a completely or partially disrobed patient in the course of treatment if the viewing is not related to patient diagnosis or treatment under current practice standards. ARS 3220412, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics in the physical therapy profession. As it relates to Principle 1, a physical therapist shall respect the rights and dignity of all individuals and shall provide compassionate care. And Principle 11, a physical therapist shall respect the rights, knowledge, and skills of colleagues and other healthcare professionals. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. At this time, I would ask if any of the board members or Mr. Angelo and Ms. Stark, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, we will make a brief statement. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the board, there's a lot of information and documentation in this complaint, so I'm going to try to briefly highlight some of the key points from our responses, and then Dr. Angelo and I will be available for any questions the board members may have. The allegations in this case are completely he said, she said, with no documentation or other additional evidence corroborating the alleged statements or behaviors occurred. While it does appear at first glance that the number of accusers seems to possibly corroborate the statements or incidents, if you review each of the alleged complaints closely, only a couple of the alleged occurrences or comments were actually witnessed by more than one person. And of those alleged occurrences, the witness statements appear to be inconsistent. One example is a comment Dr. Angelo allegedly made about a coworker washing a piece of fruit. One of the witnesses claims that Dr. Angelo approached a coworker at her desk, leaned over, and was, quote, practically slobbering like a dog, which is a very bizarre way of characterizing this interaction. The other witness indicates that she was at a sink in the kitchen washing the fruit when Dr. Angelo made the comment. Now, Dr. Angelo does not recall this incident specifically, but cannot rule out that he did not make a comment about the fruit. However, even if such a comment was made, there's absolutely nothing wrong with someone making casual conversation about washing a piece of fruit, and it's unclear why it would have been characterized by these witnesses as sexually inappropriate. In addition, the alleged draping incident kind of involved two witnesses, except one of the witnesses claims he didn't actually witness it, but he apparently knew what he may have seen if he did look down. And as is stated in our response, neither Dr. Angelo nor the patient were aware that anything was amiss here. And if it did occur, it certainly was not intentional. In addition, Dr. Angelo would have expected a colleague to alert him discreetly if a patient was that inadvertently and significantly exposed during a treatment.
Interestingly, one of the complainants who was also a supervisor indicated that the reason that no one could say anything to Dr. Angelo about this incident is because it was only witnessed by an administrative staff member. However, as just discussed, it was also apparently almost witnessed by another professional who could have appropriately alerted Dr. Angelo to the situation if Dr. Angelo was not aware that it was occurring. In addition, Dr. Angelo has admitted and recalls a couple of instances that were alleged here, but in those cases, if a coworker mentioned that they did not like something, such as a time he called a complainant a silly nickname, Dr. Angelo apologized and did not continue to use the nickname. Again, as I stated, there's a lot of information here, and I don't have enough time to specifically address each comment and each allegation, but I do want to point out before my time is up that human resources investigation did not substantiate any allegations of sexual harassment here. In addition, the complainants allege that Dr. Angelo's behavior was overlooked because of his close and personal relationships on staff. First of all, Dr. Angelo did not have a close personal relationship with these physicians. He met them while working at the employer, and they were colleagues of his. There was no outside or personal or special relationship that would cause these doctors to allegedly be so corrupt and unethical that they would cover up these allegedly egregious instances of behavior. In reality, it appears that these physicians believed that there were significant personality conflicts within the department, and complainants were actually told to stop filing HR complaints. And notably, one of the supervisors, not Dr. Angelo, was terminated in the middle of the barrage of HR complaints against him. And finally, I will note that Dr. Angelo has been in practice for approximately 9 years at various employers. This clinic at this employer is the only place he has ever received a complaint of this nature. He even worked at another clinic at the same employer at a different site during the same time frame, and no one complained about his behavior there. We have provided 4 letters of recommendation from his past and current employers, including one from a colleague at the other clinic at the employer at issue, and all of the letters give him outstanding recommendations. With that, I will end my statement, and again, we are available for any additional questions the board members may have for us at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Would any of the complainants who are on the call like to make a brief statement to the board? Mindy, can you see if any of them are muted and trying to speak by any chance?
Mr. Lloyd, are you present?
Hello.
Mr. Lloyd, do you wish to make a statement to the board members?
I would.
Go ahead.
So two wonderful people, Lars and Melissa, were painstakingly for many years to get this clinic where it was. And to get someone hired here, it's very challenging. And so they made this great team, and they created a great culture. And I'm older. And so this kind of group is very hard to find in life. You look for careers like this and opportunities like this with a good group. So especially out here in the middle of the desert, serving the indigenous people. And then Mike was hired. And in a short amount of time, he turned from the nicest person into a selfish, self-absorbed, egocentric. It was just a catastrophe. Mike, he was relentless harassment and insubordinate, passive-aggressive, and he's just sexually flirted all the time. Mike is a smart, charming man. He's very smart. He's very good at manipulating. And when there's finally a complaint against him, he found the influence of people higher up. And then they did manipulate the situation, trying to tip it in his favor. And so because of all that, Lars was fired. Mark Hawley, he resigned due to stress. He didn't want his good name tarnished, which no one blames him because everybody was scared. We're all still scared of retaliation. And you don't know the peach story. It's a peach, not a fruit. So Melissa McGinnis, she was intimidated by all the bullying. It was ridiculous and unfair treatment, just total scrutiny. She had to take leave, uproot her whole life, and get restationed somewhere else. And so Lars, Melissa, they helped build this whole thing, this whole clinic, and they're all gone. Stacia, our administrator up front, she was too afraid to work here with him, and so she stopped coming to work until he was gone. And me, I wanted to be nowhere around him. I didn't want no part. So I was here like one day a week until he was gone. And we just now started feeling a little bit okay. And then this thing comes up and it's just so stressful and it causes so much anxiety. He succeeded to uproot and destroy and have a very negative effect on the lives of six great caring clinicians with servants' hearts. These clinicians, every last one of them, they all care and treat and care for the well-being of the patients they are seeing. We have one PT left, and this guy is overwhelmed and stressed out due to the magnitude of consult that we see coming in. And a lot of those we have to refer out now. I just picked the spot back because there's too many to count. He's seen since November 2022, he's seen a caseload of 81 people, and that's just here in cells. Some are discharged, some we're still seeing, but that's not even including the wheelchair evals he does. San Javier, that's the other location that we go to, and inpatient. We have inpatient as well that he has to see and evaluate. And then this whole place is, it's just us, two people, a PT and a PTA. Mike's actions were very unethical. The clinic, it would see and treat 3 to 4 times the amount of people than we're seeing right now. All these patients are missing out.
Thank you for your statement. I'd like to also give Dr. McGinnis an opportunity to make a brief statement, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I was called in with the phone audio but was not able to unmute myself, so I'm on the computer audio. Tell me if I have any issues with that. I would like to read a statement that will take about 5 minutes, just summarizing the situation. So again, my name is Lieutenant Commander Melissa McGinnis. I was a physical therapist for Tejana Autumn Nation Healthcare, a tribally run facility in rural Sells, Arizona. And the other clinic that was mentioned, the second urban clinic, Sanavir Clinic, which they had mentioned where he didn't have the complaints at, which is where we work alone because there's only room for one therapist at a time on the days that we're in Sanavir. And a third location, I worked in an administrative office in Sells. I was there from 2015 to 2022 and the supervisor from 2017 to 2022. I supervised Dr. Angelo for a little over 2 years, although for 9 months of those 2 years, we were interrupted by COVID and reassigned to other support duties, so I wasn't supervising him at the time. Because our resources and staffing are so limited on the Tejana Autumn Nation, therapists are expected to work independently, often without day-to-day supervision from a supervisor. I did make sure our therapy staff signed to acknowledge the AZ Practice Act and the Code of Ethics every year. Because we were so independent. In September and again in December of 2021, I was alerted to complaints from multiple staff members that Dr. Angelo had made inappropriate sexual comments that I feared were Practice Act violations. And in the context of more mild, less egregious statements that he had made to me as his supervisor in passing, I thought that they were credible and reported them to HR and my chain of command. There was an HR investigation. However, when the patient draping kind of exposure complaint was reported to HR, they didn't include that in their report, so I didn't find out about that until months later. Reporting these concerns at the organizational and the state board level was terrifying, is still terrifying. It's one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do. As I feared when I reported, I faced regular retaliation and threats of retaliation at our healthcare organization after I reported them. I wonder what additional retaliation awaits me in the future. The sad reality is that it's much easier not to report potential violations like these. My responsibility to report came at significant personal and professional costs. And as Mr. Lloyd stated, I relocated my family out of state trying to get away from the situation. It's been incredibly embarrassing. When Mr. Angelo started working for us, he was under a probationary period for 1 year. I was impressed by him, as most are. He's a confident, eloquent speaker, technically knowledgeable, pursuing a manual therapy CFMT certification. He's outgoing and personable, quickly networked and made friends with the physicians who have all the power at Tohono Automation Healthcare. I never would have believed he was capable of saying or doing anything like he's been accused of. I rated him favorably on annual reviews and nominated him for staff recognition awards. But after COVID, when he returned to the department, his probationary period ended. He had made friends in high places, and that's when the inappropriate comments began to be noticed. You know, they accumulated so much that they were noticed by all in the therapy department. The physicians and nursing staff that are likely writing letters of recommendation did not work within the therapy department. They worked remotely outside of what we're doing in therapy. You're probably aware of some of the complaints, but it was reported that he asked a patient if she needed a cigarette after a manual therapy treatment. Exposed this patient, said suggestive things to staff members. I was later informed he said something suggestive about me after demonstrating a manual therapy technique when I walked away. You know, some of this was reported secondhand and delayed because the staff member who was most effective was afraid of retaliation, so she did not report right away, and I was reporting on her behalf. But less egregious things that he had said to me. You know, he would rate employees as moderately attractive, without prompting, told me that he thought another staff member was gay, even though he had a wife. So-and-so is stressed out and they need some dick, things that are very, like, embarrassing for me to repeat. I found this behavior odd, but not necessarily worth the risk of making a big deal out of until I knew it was affecting other staff members other than myself and at least one patient. He reported in front of all of us that another staff member, a dentist, had declared her love for him, and that's something private that should not be spread throughout an organization. I tried my best to give gentle verbal reminders about remaining professional, but Mr. Angelo would get upset. When I realized it crossed the line of affecting staff and patients, I reported it to HR. There was an HR investigation that actually gave me permission to terminate his employment. But the clinical directors stepped in, the physicians in charge, and said that he could not be terminated because they did not believe it was problematic, the behavior. The HR investigation was very complex. The board has that information. Again, information was withheld. Mr. Angelo was placed on administrative leave for September to November 2021 pending the investigation. I was ordered by physicians to return him to work. And I began searching for another job because of how uncomfortable I was with the situation. When he came back to work, he received a written warning and an invitation and a return to work meeting with myself, another PT supervisor, and HR. Instead of taking responsibility for his actions at this point and apologizing and saying he could work on the behaviors that offended and hurt his coworkers. Instead, he took the time to point out that our second line supervisor, the PT administrator, who was fired for approaching him with one of the complaints, he said that he was turning red. He pointed out a typo in the letter. And again, took no responsibility in his for his actions. On his first day back to work, I had to work with him alone. And the one time that he spoke to me that day, he came up to me and asked if I knew the new executive director of the PT board for Arizona and are we following Arizona laws. He waited until I was working in the parallel bars with the patient before walking over to a wall where we had our licenses displayed, stood in front of that wall studying our licenses for minutes on end. He could have done that at any time during the day, but chose to wait until it was in my line of view. This was threatening behavior by someone who had just returned to work from an HR investigation. Shortly after, he was observed to mock mandated sexual harassment training by at least one coworker, saying it was boring and that I, Melissa, told him to pay attention to it, which I had not. And when I walked into the room, he turned up a training regarding whistleblower retaliation at max volume when he had always worn headphones before during online trainings, and made sure that I heard the line that said that if you're a whistleblower, no adverse employment reaction can be taken against you. I'm not sure what this meant or how he thought it protected him from any adverse employment action. But that happened. These are just a few examples of the passive aggressive behavior upon returning to work. Later, during the mediation meeting I had with him, he denied exposing the patient, but then again said if he did, the administrative assistant should have let him know that he was exposing her, which the administrative assistant was not capable of doing because she already felt she had been sexually harassed by Dr. Angelo. Mr. Angelo had a lot of power and influence in our organization. After it came to light that I had made a PT board complaint, again, just because in reading of the Practice Act, it's my responsibility report. This is the last thing I would ever want to do, trust me. The physician clinical director, who was his friend, came to me and told me that he, the doctor, would be taking over all conversations with the PT board. In other words, I was not at liberty to talk to the PT board. The physician ostracized me, said I was not allowed to enter the hospital or clinic spaces between February and April 2022 before I was awaiting my job transfer. And then this physician terminated another PT administrator, our second line supervisor, after he was instructed by our quality management department that he had to make Mr. Angelo aware of the patient draping and exposure complaint. He was instructed to do that. He did it. Mr. Angelo got upset, and Mr. Angelo wasn't terminated. The staff member, the supervisor who made him aware of the complaint, was terminated. That is a look at his power and influence within the organization. Again, while on administrative leave and undergoing HR investigation, upon returning to work, Mr. Angelo regularly, by text and email, would request a raise as well as a retention bonus, indicating once again that he did not grasp the seriousness of the complaints against him. Regardless of the board's decision, I hope Mr. Angelo has self-reflected over the past year and will never treat patients or staff like this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. McGinnis. Dr. Angelo, go ahead.
I'm not sure if the third complainant, Dr. Holly, is on the line. Mr. Holly, are you present? I don't see him listed as the attendees, but I'm not as familiar with some of the telephone numbers that I'm seeing, so I'm not sure if he's on and just muted.
I saw him on earlier with his video, so he'd probably be on with video if he was.
Okay.
Thank you. At this time, Dr. Angela, would you answer questions from the board?
I'd be happy to answer any of your questions, absolutely.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Angela? I have a question, a couple actually, for you. What were the time frames that you worked in these clinics?
From start, when I began to when I ended my employment there, or like when I was at San Javier versus when I was at CELS?
No, your total employment with the Tohono O'odham Nation.
I began in June of 2019, and I resigned, I believe the effect date was April 14th. Of 2022, excuse me.
Okay. What is your view of the interactions that it sounds like several people are sharing about working with you?
You know, it's been shocking to me. None of these issues were ever brought to me until I was unexpectedly placed on an HR investigation. Leading up to being placed on the HR investigation, the department was tense because of the advocacy I'd been doing on behalf of. We didn't have any private treatment space, and when we returned from COVID, I requested to have that private treatment space, so because patients were complaining about privacy issues. For instance, we'd have initial evaluations discussing the patient's care, and we didn't have the availability for that space. Additionally, Melissa alludes to the retention bonus. I did bring that up with her prior to the HR investigation, and after returning, I brought it up with Lars. However, no one in the department was getting paid. I did bring those up. And as well, Phil had been sending some of my patients home due to a misinterpretation of the fourth visit rule. I had verified information with Miss Donahue at the time that we were properly addressing the fourth visit rule. At the time, the Cells Clinic was always staffed by a physical therapist, and Phil being the only physical therapist assistant would have always been covered by on-site supervision. It was not often that a patient would be seen more than three times by a PTA before a PT saw them, and I try to make as much sure of that as possible. I like to see my patients frequently. However, every once in a while on the Thonathem Nation, it is difficult to find transportation. And patients would be coming from quite far away. And Phil was refusing to see some of those patients when they had canceled an appointment and needed to come back. And things had gotten tense with me and Phil when I started bringing that up. He had yelled at me in the office in front of Melissa. He also, me and Sasha had overheard him yelling at Melissa in the back room about this. Tensions were getting high at that point, but nothing had been brought to me about anyone feeling uncomfortable with anything I had said or talked to them about, or with any patient interactions. I was placed on leave, and when I returned from leave and was given my verbal warning, no explanation was given to me as to why the contents of the verbal warning were there. And I didn't have the opportunity to have mediation conversations with them or HR regarding, my conduct. And then harassment began to start from Lars. And I'd be happy to expand on that if necessary. But I'm shocked. I've used the last year to really reflect on, I try to think of every interaction I've ever had with people, and I'm not a perfect person by any means, but I've never intended to make anyone feel uncomfortable. And as shown by my current employment and my past employment, I'm generally pretty well liked with my coworkers. I do as much as I can to lift up people around me. And I've done a lot of reflection on where I could have been better in the past. But I really, I believe I'm being characterized kind of like a monster, and that's really not me. I would never expose a patient, and I would never put a patient in a position like that either.
I think I read in some of the investigative reports that you were coached a couple of times on professionally draping patients. And so were you made aware that there might have been some concern about how you were draping your patients and that you needed to change your behavior?
Not once. The first date that I was ever made aware of a draping issue was on December 22nd, which is the date of the counseling meeting with Lars. I had never been made aware of any issues with draping patients prior to that.
And then I guess one of my other questions is if things were so volatile in this clinic with your coworkers, why did you stay so long?
I have been asking myself that question for a long time. I was under contract with the Indian Health Service Loan Repayment Program to complete a year you get college, you can get your college loans paid back. And I was in the middle of that contract during that time, and I was trying to make it work. for me and the department. I was also hopeful Lars had alluded to getting us the space and you'll eventually get paid. And Melissa had come up with what she considered a effective workaround for having patients be seen on the in case to make sure patients aren't getting sent home. I'll give you an example of that. I had a patient who I won't use any details for, but he was a young man in his 20s with Caudate Equina syndrome who needed frequent care and was being sent home by Phil. We wanted to ensure that those patients' continuity of care existed. And I was hopeful that we could improve the condition of the department. Upon reflection, I probably should have moved on. But I found a great place for me to work now, and they're very supportive of me and what I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Angelo, in regards to the situation with the patient who the claim was that she was exposed during the treatment, was there any thought in your mind as far as the, because when I read the report, it sounds like the exposure happened because of the shorts being too short. So seeing how she was, or what her attire was when she came in, was there any thought process around that could potentially be an issue?
If I remember correctly, this patient would frequently wear long spandex shorts underneath her running shorts. So that wasn't a concern for me there. But in general, with most patients, I will drape them appropriately. For instance, I would have quite a few patients who it's common to wear long dresses, on the thonalathomation, and I would have patients come in where, you know, if they have to move their legs around to perform an exercise or even on the exercise bike, I would make sure that I put a sheet in the appropriate positions to appropriately drape them at all times. So I absolutely consider that with all of my patients, including this one here.
Okay. With situations like that, as well as you brought up with, you know, maybe inappropriate attire for therapy that could lead somebody to be exposed, it doesn't sound like that clinic had any like private space, as you mentioned, but do you typically have their lower extremities facing a wall away from, you know, additional patient view or staff view or anything like that?
Typically, yes. Frequently this patient, would be in at the end of the day. So there would be one other clinician in there. Our policy was always to have another clinician in the office whenever we were treating. And I believe I always had her facing in an appropriate position. Yes. I don't recall otherwise.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Angelo, my question's about your, the time frame. It seems like there were things from the statements that everything was going well, and then suddenly things changed. Can you tell us about your CFMT and this technique that you used in terms of anterior to posterior, as well as were there anyone else in the clinics that you worked at that had this manual certification?
Thank you for the question. I began taking CFMT courses as soon as I graduated college and decided to sit for my CFMT about 2 years before I took the test. The mobilization at hand, they nickname it the jackknife mobilization. Essentially what you're doing is you're looking through the iliopsoas region and utilizing your manual skills to address anterior lumbar spine issues here. I could be happy to expand on that further. This is an upper level course from the CFMT. I am only one of, I think, two CFMTs, maybe three in the state of Arizona. Oh, excuse me, my computer just X me out here. I don't know if you can still hear me or not. I'm just signing back into my computer.
We can still hear you and see you.
Okay. I'll talk while it comes back on. There we go. Sorry about that. So I have not worked in any other clinics with anyone with CFMT training. However, I have worked with plenty of clinicians at courses that do have CFMT training, and we perform this on each other. Most lumbar spine hip issues addressing iliopsoas would be quite a common treatment there, as well as patients lacking lumbar flexion.
Thank you.
I think following up on Dr. Hike's question, though, what was the change? So things were going well, and then and then things weren't going well, and people are saying that you are being derogative and sexually implicit and harassing. So tell us about that.
I apologize for not expanding on that further. I forgot about that second half of the question. So, you know, everything was going really well. We were friends. We used to mountain bike together. I've gone hiking with Mark, mountain biking with all of them except for Melissa. I had a pool party for the department at my house. We were friends outside of work and at work. I didn't believe I was saying anything derogatory at work at all. We did go on COVID sequestration. Everything was going well. When we went on COVID sequestration, we were trying to figure out how we were going to do the schedule. So we were basically all helping out with different areas. I was still calling patients to check in with them, as you can see in my notes with the patient at hand here. But around that, we had different responsibilities, such as first check at the hospital, where we would scan patients for their symptoms, as well as helping out with labs, bringing testing back from our COVID clinic into the lab at San Javier Clinic. When this first started, I was willing to work at either of the clinics. They were doing 3D12s in cells, or they were doing 5/8s in San Javier. And I offered to take the San Javier role unless anyone else wanted it. Everyone, you know, agreed. They wanted to do the three shifts over at cells, and I agreed to help out San Javier. Throughout this, everything went really well. When I returned, I began advocating for us getting a patient room. And to give you some perspective, the cells clinic is not very large. There's a few tables in there, some pull curtains if privacy is necessary. And there's one very small room in the back that was frequently utilized by Alan Richardson, our speech therapist. It was not frequently available at all for private care. Now, just to add to that a little bit, in San Javier, there would frequently be two therapists at a time. There were two rooms, and we would have two therapists scheduled frequently there. So there was interaction at both clinics. But when I returned, I started inquiring with Melissa about the lack of space and the plans that the understanding when Alan and myself were both hired was that the IT room next to us would become a speech gym, and then we would have our private treatment room available to us for initial evaluations and laser treatments or privacy as necessary. That never materialized, and I was kind of getting the runaround with it. The issue that I already highlighted about the fourth visit rule and our lack of getting retention bonuses, what was happening was, that I was getting quite a bit of pushback. Someone who, has been said, I have made a lot of professional relationships, but no personal relationships, with these individuals. I only saw one of the physicians outside of work once in a large group setting, nothing personal or private, and nothing that I keep in touch with these individuals about. A concerned administrator who is not in my chain of command addressed me and said that she was really concerned, and that people were essentially intentionally not pushing forward my retention bonus, and that inappropriate things were being said to them, like Melissa being upset that I had blocked her on Facebook, which is not true. I was studying for my CFMT and deactivated it, so I made sure to make her aware of that. She basically, this physician told me, Mike, you know, just lay low, those things will eventually come. It's getting, tense. She basically told me I had the word she used was a difficult chain of command. So I laid low. I stopped with the complaints. And then the following, so then August goes by, I take my CFMT. I get a month later, I get notice that I passed my CFMT, and the day after that, I was placed on paid administrative leave with no explanation. It is my belief that the way things went south was that when I started advocating for things, I mean, Melissa had pulled me aside one time and said that people were annoyed that I was complaining about this, but never that I had said anything inappropriate. So I stopped complaining to the staff. One example of this was that on a Wednesday when Melissa was out, frequently in the mornings, we don't see patients. TO and HC, they don't see patients in the mornings. I can only speculate as to if this is, you know, relevant to this or not. But I started asking, you know, Alan, Mark, and Phil what they thought about the space issues and how we could better advocate for our department. And the next day I got a phone call from Melissa essentially accusing me of mutiny, and she was very upset with that. I've never tried to take Melissa's role. I never wanted a supervisory role with TONHC. And I've never tried to threaten anybody in the department. I was just simply trying to advocate for improving our ability to see our patients. So that's how I could speculate why this would have turned south. But as I said before, no mention of any misconduct from me or anyone being uncomfortable with things that I have said ever came to me until this HR investigation. And then when I was returned, I didn't get any explanation about it.
Thank you. Board members, considering this is an initial review, are there any other questions that you need answers to from Mr. Angelo in order to?
I do. I have one. Yep. Karen Bustillo. I guess my only other question on here is, why do you feel that the other staff members are fearing retaliation?
That's a good question. When I returned to work and I had meetings, so I was returned to work under a different duty station is what they call it. So I was no longer under Melissa's supervision. I was under Lars's supervision, who is her, was her supervisor. Which made my chain of command now the next person in line being Dr. Ottman. When I had meetings with Melissa after Lars was terminated, I requested to have meetings with Melissa and HR so that we could try to find a path forward. She was upset that I had had opportunity to speak with Dr. Ottman, and I explained that I was discussing issues that I had had with Lars regarding his harassment of me, and that Dr. Ottman was in my appropriate chain of command. I didn't influence these individuals in any way. I did network with these physicians. I talked to them. They were the doctors of my patients. We all got along pretty well. But I never, you know, forced or blackmailed or anything like that. I was just explaining how I was being treated by Lars, which then I believe led to his termination. I can't speculate beyond that. I don't know, honestly.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. McGinnis has a comment in the comment section.
Dr. McGinnis, you can respond, but please keep it brief.
Understood. Yep. Just wanted to respond on what has been said. Most of these are very secondary issues that I think were mischaracterized. Regarding privacy in cells, we do have privacy curtains there around all of the treatment tables. We did not have a policy that a second clinician was present. Mr. Angelo worked a late night shift, so he was there a half hour later than anyone else. That was his modified schedule. So he did work alone without other staff members present, and that was his schedule. And because staffing is so limited at the two clinics, they had to be able to work independently. We did have a facility draping policy as well, and they signed to acknowledge the policy and procedure manual each year. Regarding being friends outside of work, I would not say that was ever the case. I did attend one pool party at his house the, you know, first month or so that he was there to meet everyone. I thought that was nice that he invited everyone over, so I did attend that. But that was the only time I ever saw him outside of work. As far as him advocating for patients, Ms. Richardson has all of the documentation of the efforts that I was making on an ongoing basis to push his retention bonus forward and to gain additional clinical space. All of that, unfortunately, went out the window due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They were not going to allow additional space for therapy, and retention bonuses throughout the organization were being held. So it was not anything unique to our situation, and I have documentation that I was advocating for all of that. I was never upset about being blocked by on Facebook. The reason that Michael is even aware of that is because I reported to a PT administrator, Lars, who reported to Dr. Ross, an acting clinical director at the time, who socialized with Mike. When I went to Lars and said, Mike is posting on Facebook during work hours, Lars went to his chain of command. Next up is Dr. Ross. Instead of keeping that confidential as part of the chain of supervisory command, Dr. Ross, instead of saying we should address the issue, went and told Mike and broke confidentiality that his supervisors had concerns that he was posting on Facebook during work hours. And it was a passive aggressive post about work during work hours. But again, these are all very secondary issues that I don't think are very relevant. I did not call you. You called me to discuss, when you said I was accusing you of mutiny, you called to discuss and said you wanted to discuss the conversation about retention bonus. The concern that was that you were telling your patients that you weren't getting your retention bonus and you were telling everyone throughout the organization that you weren't getting it, and it was distracting to patient care. So those were the only concerns that were brought forward. Thank you.
I think at this time we'll go into deliberation unless there are any other questions for any of the complainants or for Mr. Angelo. Any objection to going into deliberation?
No.
Okay. Okay. Board members, we have some allegations as part of the complaint, and so it's the time where we'll go through those and determine if any of them are substantiated through what we know, or if we want to move this to a different level of hearing. So one of the allegations is engaging in performing a substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act, a failure to act regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. And then engaging in sexual misconduct, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics. Principle A, physical therapists shall respect the rights and dignity of all individuals and shall provide compassionate care. And Principle 11, a physical therapist shall respect the rights, knowledge, and skill of colleagues and other professionals. Are there any concerns or any thoughts about substantiation of any of the allegations?
So I'll go ahead and start us off. This is a very long report. There's a lot of stuff in here. To me, it reads a lot like just a HRB fest. I mean, the only possible violation I see is the concern about draping and the concern, and maybe the concern about privacy. It looks like those were addressed, and to the extent there's any kind of understanding or actual problem, it looks like their HR department is already on it. I don't think any of this rises to the level of the kind of sexual misconduct that is associated or that is implicit in our rules. And frankly, I'm really concerned about making the physical therapy board kind of like the second resort HR complaint form for the physical therapy community. What I'm seeing here are, you know, at best some comments that were either that were mildly offensive over the course of a couple of weeks, over the course of the whole of the post COVID kind of service. I don't think that rises to the level of us getting involved. That's kind of where I am right now. I mean, given what I see in this, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
Thank you.
Yeah, this, I just think this is a very difficult case to look at. It is very he said, she said. There's not necessarily any, you know, true proof, you know, of anything, you know, occurring outside of, you know, what was documented in their HR reports and, you know, what is being reported by the complainants and then Mr. Angelo as well. I tend to agree with you, Josh. I don't necessarily feel like we should become the, you know, the next go-to if their HR department is not capable of handling the situation for them. Although I will say one of the things that I did have concern over was the draping situation. Regardless of whether that was resolved or not, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like that's something that, you know, as a therapist, you really should notice, you know, if you're going to be in a position to be exposed like that, you know, that I know I've had to explain that to patients before, you know, you need to come dressed appropriately. If I had any thought that they were not dressed appropriately for a specific exercise, I'd either modify the exercise or I wouldn't have them perform it that day. So I feel like that is definitely something that needs to have attention put on it. Do I think that that rises to the level of disciplinary action? Not necessarily. I think that I'd be probably more likely to go with some sort of education, you know, in regards to ethics, draping, things of that nature. And I think that that would cover a lot of the other issues that have been coming up as well.
This is Mr. Greer. I tend to agree. I don't think I can overlook the obvious hurt and what seems very maybe benign in a clinical sense, looking on it in, you know, from where we sit. You know, I think it was a very real problem in this practice. And I think there are some ethical issues that probably need to be addressed. I do agree that this is likely a personality conflict, but you know, I can't condone what I see some very hurtful behavior. Whether it was intended to be so or not, I think mm-hmm. you have to be heard. It was received that way. So those are kind of my thoughts.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mr. Greer, that it seems like there just seemed to be a consistent pattern of unprofessional behavior, mismatch, communication issues, but nonetheless increased the tension amongst coworkers, which a toxic work environment can impact patient care as well. I would be in favor of non-disciplinary with ethics CEUs.
Yeah, my apologies if it sounded like I was dismissing the complaints of the complainants. By no means was I dismissing the hurt that you can obviously hear. You know, in their stories.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way at all. So,
I have no doubt there was a lot of personality conflict. I'm just hesitant to, and frankly, even possibly unethical behavior. But I don't think there's sufficient. It doesn't seem like me that there's sufficient evidence to make a finding on that front. And to be honest, I'm really, really hesitant to impose any kind of a finding when this has previously been investigated by the Tohono O'odham HR. And if they've previously done an investigation, and at least from what I see, they don't have concerns, that really does make me, to be honest, doubt the extent to which this was the problem is alleged to be. So I guess that's where I am. You know, that I get it. I get that there's clearly a lot of conflict. You know, I get that maybe Mr. Angelo should have looked for an exit earlier, but I can't, I'm really hesitant to blame him for trying to fix the situation. And I don't see if the HR investigation is complete and done and has not come after him, I'm hesitant to have us go do it. Even if it is with ethics CEUs.
I thought the HR investigation resulted in a modified work schedule. Right? So there was something that they came back with an action for him.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't see anywhere here that modified work schedule was due to something that he did wrong other than just personality conflicts. Am I wrong? I mean, that's kind of how I read it, is there's a modified work schedule, but I didn't see that was anything other than just let's separate these people.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Barton, I'm not sure the HR department's looking at the physical therapy standard of ethics. You could easily say, hey, this doesn't rely to a violation of any employment act, but it could rise to to the ethical practices of a physical therapist. And that's kind of what I'm seeing here is, you know, I think there was probably some improper conduct, and the way things were handled is not what we want to see our physical therapists doing. And so those are just my thoughts.
Yeah. And I'm sympathetic to that, but I look at the statutes that we're talking about, right? You're talking about engaging in sexual misconduct or intentionally viewing a completely or partially disrobed patient. No, that's probably the one that seems closest with the draping incident. But again, the testimony we've heard here is that he didn't notice, so he didn't intentionally view anything if he didn't notice. And it doesn't sound like any of the witnesses had any evidence that this was an intentional thing either.
And I agree with you on that. I don't think there is, you know, evidence on that one. I'm looking at Principle 1 and Principle 11 of the Ethical Code. That's mm-hmm. where I'm looking. I'm not looking at that first violation or the first two violations. I'm looking at that third violation, Principle 1 and Principle 11. And that's where I think the licensee may benefit for some continuing education.
And I'll just—I don't know if it's okay for me to interject here, but I would direct you to the investigative report on page 6 under the analysis. Mr. Angelo did have to complete upon his return on 10/20. He had to complete online training upon his return from his leave, his required leave while they were doing the investigation.
Are you referring to the harassment training and that I saw within the report and the video?
Yes.
Okay, and he had mentioned that everybody was going through that in his testimony on the video with you, but is that not accurate?
It's my understanding from what Dr. McGinnis stated previously as well that once he returned from his administrative leave after the investigation, he was required to complete, everybody did complete annual online training, but when he returned from his leave, he was required to do online training. That's where she was describing where he was turning up the volume.
Yeah. So
there was some required training that he had to complete as a condition of his return.
So Ms. Richardson, my understanding from the testimony today and the documentation we have is that and the annual training were the same. Am I misunderstanding that?
My understanding that it was separate, that there was a requirement that he come back and do specific training as a condition of his return.
Disciplinary action from the HR complaint.
Madam Chair, may I interject briefly on that? It's Sarah Stark.
Actually, we're in deliberations, so no, I'm going to ask that you're not, if that's okay. Okay. Thank you.
I'm in agreement with the principles that this is in violation of the principles 1 and 11. We have multiple people that are making similar comments, and sounds like a toxic work environment that has forced people to leave. So I agree with the idea of perhaps ethical continuing education.
I guess as it responds to the principles, I guess my concern is, and I'm, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'm not super sure how to do this, but it seems to me that this principle has got to include something more than just personality conflicts, right? I mean, I think as a physical therapy board where we're dealing with people's licensure, it's got to be something more than these folks just don't get along. And, you know, that's what concerns me is it seems very clear that when this COVID restriction ended, these folks came back and for whatever reason, they didn't get along. And I'm sympathetic to that. It very clearly is a problem. It's a problem that's resulted in Mr. Angela leaving. It's a problem that has resulted in a couple of these other folks leaving this facility. I guess I'm concerned about what line we draw between that, which the way I read this seems to be the basis of how these statements got taken the wrong way. I mean, I'm not seeing anything I'm not seeing a whole lot of flagrant disrespect other than that, right? A lot of the testimony today has been about the tone and kind of the feelings that people had when they were talking to him. And I worry, I don't know. I worry about us becoming the arbiters of that.
I hear you. I think there's a couple of things that are on my mind. First, there are three separate complaints made in totally different timeframes, right? Sure. Of colleagues with this person. Second of all, they not only spoke about tone, they talk about behaviors. And whether intentional or not intentional, I think there's enough there that a non-disciplinary finding requiring him to complete some training in ethics could potentially prevent another complaint that actually has now escalated to something else with potentially his attitude. So I would be in favor of non-disciplinary, but some courses in ethics around professional physical therapy behavior.
I'd like to make a motion, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I would move that we issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education of 6 hours in the area of ethics to be completed within 6 months.
Second.
Okay. Are there any discussion? Okay, hearing none. G, do you mind calling the vote, please?
It's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order, which shall be completed within 6 months for continuing education courses that are pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements for 6 hours in the area of ethics.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Angelo. If you're still on the board, staff will get with you.
Thank you all for your time.
Mm-hmm, thank you. Next on our agenda is item 2227, Eric Beidinger, PT, initial review. Mr. Beidinger, are you present?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and are you represented by counsel?
Yes. Good morning, Dr. King. I'm David Williams. I'm counsel for Dr. Bittiger.
Hi, Mr. Williams.
Good morning.
Is the patient MJ present?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being on.
Dr. King, before we get started on this case, can we stop and restart the recording?
Sure.
Okay. One moment, please. We are stopping the recording at 11:36.